Chapter 2. Could not suffice among so many beauties. At last came a brisk neat little knock, and looking into the hall, I saw a gentleman taking off his clogs there, whilst Sir Giles Bacon's big footman was looking on with rather a contemptuous air. "What name shall I announce?" says he, with a wink at Gregory on the stair. The gentleman in clogs said, with quiet dignity, "Mr. Frederick Minchin." "Pump Court, Temple," is printed on his cards in very small type. And he is a rising barrister of the Western Circuit. He is to be found at Home of Mornings. Afterwards, T. Westminster, as you read on his back door. Inks and Minchin's reports are probably known to my legal friends. This is the Minchin in question. He is decidedly genteel, and is rather in request at the balls of the judges and sergeants' ladies. For he dances irreproachably, and goes out to dinner as much as ever he can. He mostly dines at the Oxford and Cambridge Club, of which you can easily see by his appearance that he is a member. He takes the joint and his half pint of wine, for Minchin does everything like a gentleman. He is rather of a literary turn, still makes Latin verses with some neatness, and before he was called, was remarkably fond of the flute. When Mr. Minchin goes out in the evening, his clerk brings his bag to the club, to dress, and if it is at all muddy, he turns up his trousers, so that he may come in without a speck. For such a party as this, he will have new gloves. Otherwise Frederick, his clerk, is chiefly employed in cleaning them with India rubber. He has a number of pleasant stories about the circuit and the university, which he tells with a simper to his neighbor at dinner, and has always the last joke of Mr. Baron Maul. He has a private fortune of £5,000. He is a dutiful son. He has a sister married, in Harley Street, and Lady Jane Ranville has the best opinion of him, and says he is a most excellent, and highly principled young man. Her ladyship and daughter arrived just as Mr. Minchin had popped his clogs into the umbrella stand. And the rank of that respected person, and the dignified manner in which he led her upstairs, caused all sneering on the part of the domestics to disappear. The ballroom door. 100 of knocks follow Frederick Minchin's. In half an hour Messrs. Spoff, Pinch, and Clapperton have begun their music, and Mulligan, with one of the Miss Bacons, is dancing majestically in the first quadrille. My young friends Giles and Tom prefer the landing place to the drawing rooms, where they stop all night, robbing the refreshment trays as they come up or down. Giles has eaten 14 ices. He will have a dreadful stomachache tomorrow. Tom has eaten 12, but he has had 4 more glasses of negus than Giles. Grunzel, the occasional waiter, from whom Master Tom buys quantities of ginger beer, can of course deny him nothing. That is Grunzel, in the tights, with the tray. Meanwhile direct your attention to the three gentlemen at the door. They are conversing. First gent. Who's the man of the house? The bald man. Second gent. Of course. The man of the house is always bald. He's a stockbroker, I believe. Snooks brought me. First gent. Have you been to the tea room? There's a pretty girl in the tea room. Blue eyes. Pink ribbons, that kind of thing. Second gent. Who the deuce is that girl with those tremendous shoulders? Gad! I do wish somebody would smack him. Third gent. Sir, that young lady is my niece, sir. My niece, my name is Blades, sir. Second gent. Well, Blades. Smack your niece's shoulders. She deserves it, begged, she does. Come in, Jinx. Present me to the Perkinses. Hello. Here's an old country acquaintance, Lady Bacon, as I live. With all the piglings, she never goes out without the whole litter. Exeunt first and second gents. Lady Bacon, the Miss Bacons, Mr. Flam. Lady B. Leonora. Maria. Amelia. Here's the gentleman we met at Sir John Porkington's. The Mrs. Bacon, expecting to be asked to dance, smile simultaneously, and begin to smooth their tuckers. Mr. Flam. Lady Bacon. I couldn't be mistaken in you. Won't you dance, Lady Bacon? Lady B, go away, you droll creature. Mr. Flam. And these are your ladyship's seven lovely sisters, to judge from their likenesses to the charming Lady Bacon. Lady B. My sisters, he. My daughters, Mr. Flam, and they dance, don't you, girls? The Mrs. Bacon. Oh yes. Mr. Flam. Gad. How I wish I was a dancing man. Exit Flam. Mr. Larkins. I have not been able to do justice, only a Lawrence could do that, to my respected friend Mrs. Perkins, in this picture, but Larkin's portrait is considered very like. Adolphus Larkins has been long connected with Mr. Perkins' city establishment, and is asked to dine twice or thrice per annum. Evening parties are the great enjoyment of this simple youth, who, after he has walked from Kentish Town to Thames Street, and passed 12 hours in severe labor there, and walked back again to Kentish Town, finds no greater pleasure than to attire his lean person in that elegant evening costume which you see, to walk into town again, and to dance at anybody's house who will invite him. Islington, Pentonville, Somers Town, are the scenes of many of his exploits. And I have seen this good-natured fellow performing figure dances at Notting Hill, at a house where I am ashamed to say there was no supper, no negus even to speak of, nothing but the bare merits of the polka in which Adolphus revels. To describe this gentleman's infatuation for dancing, let me say, in a word, that he will even frequent boarding-house hops, rather than not go. He has clogs too, like Minchin. But nobody laughs at him. He gives himself no airs, but walks into a house with a knock and a demeanor, so tremulous and humble, that the servants rather patronize him. He does not speak, or have any particular opinions, but when the time comes, begins to dance. He bleats out a word or two to his partner during this operation, seems very weak and sad during the whole performance, and, of course, is set to dance with the ugliest women everywhere. The gentle, kind spirit. When I think of him night after night, hopping, and jigging, and trudging off to Kentish Town, so gently, through the fogs, and mud, and darkness, I do not know whether I ought to admire him, because his enjoyments are so simple, and his disposition so kindly, or laugh at him, because he draws his life so exquisitely mild. Well, we can't be all roaring lions in this world. There must be some lambs, and harmless, kindly, gregarious creatures for eating and shearing. See, even good-natured Mrs. Perkins is leading up the trembling Larkins to the tremendous Miss Bunion. Miss Bunion, the poetess, author of Earth Strings, The Deadly Nightshade, Passion Flowers, and See Though Her Poems Breathe Only of Love, Miss B has never been married. She is nearly 6 feet high. She loves waltzing beyond even PC, and I think lobster salad as much as either. She confesses to 28, in which case her first volume, The Orphan of Gozo, cut up by Mr. Rigby in the Quarterly, with his usual kindness, must have been published when she was 3 years old. For a woman all soul, she certainly eats as much as any woman I ever saw. The sufferings that he has had to endure are, she says, beyond compare. The poems which she writes breathe a withering passion, a smoldering despair, an agony of spirit that would melt the soul of a drayman were he to read them. Well, it is a comfort to see that she can dance of nights, and to know, for the habits of illustrious literary persons are always worth knowing, that she eats a hot mutton chop for breakfast every morning of her blighted existence. She lives in a boarding house at Brompton, and comes to the party in a fly. Mr. Hicks. It is worth 2 pence to see Miss Bunion and Positon Hicks, the great poet, conversing with one another, and to talk of one to the other afterwards. How they hate each other! I, in my wicked way, have sent Hicks almost raving mad, by praising Bunion to him in confidence, and you can drive Bunion out of the room by a few judicious panegyrics of Hicks. Hicks first burst upon the astonished world with poems, in the Byronic manner, colon the death shriek, the bastard of Lara, comma the Adible, the fire ship of Boxerus, and other works. His ovelays, in Mr. Moore's early style, were pronounced to be wonderfully precocious for a young gentleman then only 13, and in a commercial academy, a tuning. Subsequently, this great bard became less passionate and more thoughtful, and, at the age of 20, wrote Diasyncrasy in 40 books, 4 to Erit, a stupendous epic, as the review said, and De Megatheria, a magnificent contribution to our pre-Adamite literature, according to the same authorities. Not having read these works, it would ill become me to judge them, but I know that poor Jingle, the publisher, always attributed his insolvency to the latter epic, which was magnificently printed in elephant folio. Hicks has now taken a classical turn, and has brought out Poseidon, Iacchus, Hephaestus, and I dare say, is going through the mythology. But I should not like to try him at a passage of the Greek Delectus, any more than 20,000 others of us who have had a lassical education. Hicks was taken in an inspired attitude regarding the chandelier, and pretending he didn't know that Miss Pettifer was looking at him. Her name is Anna Maria, daughter of Hicks and Pettifer, solicitors, Bedford Row, but Hicks calls her Anth in his album Verses, and is himself an eminent dry salter in the city. Miss Meggett. Poor Miss Meggett is not so lucky as Miss Bunyan. Nobody comes to dance with her, though as he has a new frock on, as she calls it, and rather a pretty foot, which she always manages to stick out. She is 47, the youngest of three sisters, who live a moldy old house, near Middlesex Hospital, where they have lived for I don't know how many score of years, but this is certain. The eldest Miss Meggett saw the Gordon riots out of that same parlor window, and tells the story, how her father, physician to George III, was robbed of his cue in the streets on that occasion. The two old ladies have taken the brevet rank, and are addressed as Mrs. Jane and Mrs. Betsy. One of them is at whist in the back drawing room. But the youngest is still called Miss Nancy, and is considered quite a baby by her sisters. She was going to be married once to a brave young officer, Ensign Angus McQuirk, of the Whistlebinky Fencibles, but he fell at Quatre Bras, by the side of the gallant Snuffmull, his commander. Deeply, deeply did Miss Nancy deplore him. But time has cicatrized the wounded heart. She is gay now, and would sing or dance, eh, or marry if anybody asked her. Do go, my dear friend, I don't mean to ask her to marry, but to ask her to dance. Never mind the looks of the thing. It will make her happy, and what does it cost you? Ah, my dear fellow, take this counsel. Always dance with the old ladies, always dance with the governesses. It is a comfort to the poor things, when they get up in their garret, that somebody has had mercy on them. And such a handsome fellow as you two. Miss Ranville, Rev. Mr. Toop, Miss Mullins, Mr. Winter. Mr. W. Miss Mullins, look at Miss Ranville. What a picture of good humor. Miss M.O., you satirical creature. Mr. W. Do you know why she is so angry? She expected to dance with Captain Grigg, and by some mistake, the Cambridge professor got hold of her. Isn't he a handsome man? Miss M.O., you droll wretch. Mr. W. Yes, he's a fellow of college, fellows mayn't marry. Miss Mullins, poor fellows, eh, Miss Mullins? Miss M. Law. Mr. W. And professor of phlebotomy in the university. He flatters himself he is a man of the world, Miss Mullins, and always dances in the long vacation. Miss M. You malicious, wicked monster. Mr. W. Do you know Lady Jane Ranville? Miss Ranville's mama. A ball once a year, footman in canary-colored livery. Baker Street, 6 dinners in the season, starves all the year round. Pride and poverty, you know, I've been to her ball once. Ranville, Ranville's her brother, and between you and me but this, dear Miss Mullins, is a profound secret, I think he's a greater fool than his sister. Miss M.O., you satirical, droll, malicious, wicked thing you. Mr. W., you do me injustice, Miss Mullins, indeed you do.
Shane Angles.
Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.